Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're about to listen to Bananas for Bonanza, episode 11.
This is Andy Daly. Hello. Here on this free feed, I'll be re-releasing all of the back episodes of Bananas for Bonanza, one every other week. If you want to hear new episodes ad-free, please subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/AndyDaly. The entire Bananas for Bonanza archive is also waiting for you there, and you can access lots and lots of bonus content. So do that. Okay. Thank you. Enjoy.
Yeah! Bonanza, it's the finest show alive. So consult your TV guide, get your great outdoors inside, take some Ponderosa pride, and forever may it ride. I'm Bananas for Bonanza.
Dang, what happened there, Mutt? What'd you do?
Well, I figured if we're going to go on for 430 of these episodes, I can't put a new weapon in each time. So I'm just going to write a listener's name on a bullet and fire it in the air, a different one each time. That was Elisa McCaughlin from Bewidji, Minnesota. How you doing, Elisa?
Lisa, that was your bullet. That bullet had your name on it. You're lucky to be alive if you're listening to this now. Well, yeah, that's a good idea. Save your ammunition, Mutt, because 400, we got 421 episodes, including the one we're about to do now. Folks, yes, hello, friend, come on in. The gate is open wide. Welcome to Bananas for Bonanza. Damn, it's good to be back. Yeah, crazy about it. This is the only podcast on the entire planet Earth where each episode of the classic television Western television series Bonanza is discussed in depth. Believe it or not, nobody else is doing it. It's incredible because Bonanza defined what it means to be a man, to be a Western man, to be an American, to be an Indian or a Chinese fella. It defined everything you care to think about for every single one of us ever since it premiered. And folks, we are back. That's right. We were gone for a few weeks there, I'm afraid. There appeared to have been a little bit of misunderstanding in which certain people made complete asses out of themselves, and they revealed themselves, I'm sorry to say, to be potential Frankenstein. And I am closely monitoring that situation. As you may know, in addition to being the poet laureate of the American West and the host of this podcast, I am also under constant monster attack. I can't seem to go more than a couple of days without that I have to slaughter some kind of a monster or other. And including many times Frankensteins, and I put some folks at Earwolf on notice that they appeared to be showing signs of Frankensteinism, and they got this podcast back up and running right quick after that, and that probably means that they are Frankensteins, but they just didn't want to make it so obvious. So, anyways, that's the backstory as to where we've been and what's going on now and why it is that we're back. But I don't want to dwell on any of that unpleasantness, and I have been told time and time again to please not discuss my monster slaughtering, and so I just had to get that little bit out of the way, and now we move on to the rest of what I'm saying. Okay, we're back. Nothing can get in the way of us discussing every single episode of Bonanza, of which there are sadly only 431, and today we're going to devote this episode to a close examination of Season 1, Episode 11, The Truckee Strip.
But I yeah. watched number 13, which was Vendetta.
Oh, right. You just mentioned that before we got on the air. Amy Sleverson accidentally watched the wrong episode. But we'll make it work.
Yeah, right? We'll see what kind of parallels they have and how they can relate. And if I'm using this word right, juxtapose.
Maybe they do, in fact, juxtapose on each other's. Well, the Truckee Strip, this one. But listen, I mean, I can't even tell you. I cannot believe the guests that we have to help us out doing this today. It's truly phenomenal. But I believe this is the closest that we could possibly get, genetically speaking, to having an actual member of the original goddamn cast of Bonanza on this show. You couldn't get closer, right? From a DNA perspective.
No. Unless you're at the altar.
Unless you're at the altar. I don't even know what that means. But
where God lives.
I see. Yes. Yes. Yeah. God. Well, I can't even believe it's happened. Before we introduce him, I just want to tell you who you're already listening to. Obviously, you know, there's me, Dalton Wilcox. And we also got Mutt Taylor's over here every time. Hello, Mutt.
God damn, it's good to be back. I don't like to curse except for when I do. And right now, I want to just say, God damn, it's good to be back.
Hell yeah. And also, she never curses. Christian entrepreneur and biblical/bonanza scholar, Amy Sleverson. Hello, Amy.
Hi. I've upgraded into women's health products.
Oh, boy.
That can also be used for men. So they're men's health. The men's health products are a little cheaper. Uh-huh. And they're all gummies. They're gummies.
Hey, what do you mean? Everything's a gummy?
Yeah, it's a nutritional gummy, and it gives you courage for vengeance.
Wow.
I'll take some of those. Sign me up.
Yes.
Yeah, revenge gummies. I'd like a whole pack of revenge gummies. I need to take revenge against a lot of folks, and I've got a sweet tooth. It's perfect for me.
You do a cleanse, so you just have gummies for 30 days.
So these are products. Now, it seems like every time we do one of these, Amy, you've got a new product line inspired by this week's episode. Now, this product line is inspired by the episode we're going to listen to two episodes from now.
But from what I understand, that there is a certain romance that develops within this that's like Romeo and Juliet.
Yep.
And that's also one of my herbal products.
What do you mean?
It means that when don't they poison themselves? But this isn't a poison. This is in no way a poison, though it is not FDA approved. It's a powder you put in a drink.
But what does it do? Does it make you able to be dead for a while until your families leave you alone?
It's $19.99 is what it is.
It's $19.99.
It's at your price point.
It's a powder, and you pour it in your drink. Yeah, that's right. Romeo and Juliet, what happened there? The one guy poisoned himself, but just temporary, and the other one says, oh, no, and stabbed himself or herself. I don't remember who did what. And then the other one woke up and said, oh, damn it. And then himself or herself.
You might not know this to look at me, but I'm a huge Shakespeare head. And you know, two houses, both alike in name, here in Verona. And yes, that's right. He fake poisons himself and wakes up and she's already stabbed herself or some shit like that.
That's funny. Yeah. All right. Well, now it's time to introduce our guest. And I mean, I'm quaking in my boots. I can't believe it's happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this feller is literally the goddamn child of Dan Blocker, who played Hoss Cartwright. I can't even believe it. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to actor and hilarious man, Dirk Blocker. God damn, it's good to be here, boys and girls.
Wow. What a treat.
We got a real yeehaw out of Dirk. I can't believe you're our first guest to give us a proper yeehaw.
Well, that'll be the last one, I promise.
Well, feel free. Just got to alert Brian, who's a sound engineer. Tell him, right. Yeah, it's coming.
Off. Sorry.
No, he don't mind. Dirk, I can't believe this. I have a million and one questions for you. Your father was the great Dan Blocker, who played. Now, I have to tell you, it took me a long time to accept that the people on Bonanza was not actually named, you know, Ben Cartwright and Adam Cartwright and Hoss Cartwright, and that they was actors playing those roles. And that Sometimes I still don't believe it.
Same here. Is your grandfather not Ben Cartwright? I'm a little confused.
Right.
I also am confused. I've been confused about that for years now. I'm not quite sure. He wore a wig, and I've worn a wig, so there's that similarity.
Hang on, pretty much does it.
That's a genealogical test.
Why do the other sons keep leaving your father behind to fight battles? They're always going off to San Francisco to see ladies, and then it's you and your dad Cartwright.
Because my dad was the baddest ass of them all. Oh, yeah.
He really was. I tell you, we talk about that all the time. One thing we say about Hoss Cartwright is that he appears to have unlimited strength, which is amazing.
Yeah, he was invincible.
Yeah, he was.
Do you carry any of that with you? Did that get passed down?
Not much.
Okay.
To be perfectly honest with you.
But
Hoss Cartwright, he carries every episode.
I'm a bit of a wimp.
Nah, come on.
Nah, you heard my wee-haw.
It was powerful. That was a powerful yee-haw.
Thank you.
So you have a little bit of unlimited strength.
A little tiny bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there was only one Hoss, let's face it.
That's for damn sure. Now, yeah, one thing that happens with Hoss all the time is that when it's fighting time, and that happens in this episode, it's like, all right, let Hoss do the fighting. And he just gets in there and he hulks out and he just smash destroy. Was that something he would do at home?
Not to my siblings and I, not to the children.
All right.
Could an unsuspecting mailman get a little too close to the house, or a milkman or somebody?
Yeah.
We a lot of legal fees in those.
Hoss smash.
He'd just go into a blind rage.
That's what seems to happen. He just seems to, you can't see nothing in his eyes anymore. It's just destruction.
Just complete and utter rage. What I like best about the fight he had in this episode was how Adam has a book in one hand and stops Pa from intervening. Let Hoss kick this guy's ass. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. Adam, who, by the way, I might have to watch it again to know for sure, but I don't believe he's in this episode throughout, but I don't believe he opened his mouth the one time.
I think you're right. And which lends credence to our theory that this was just a pilot that had been discarded from another show or something.
Could be.
Oh, yeah.
They shelled out the money for James Coburn.
Jimmy Coburn. Now, don't get me started. I go way back with Jimmy Coburn.
Yeah, that's right. This is a good one. Hey, that reminds me. I meant to show a clip. Hang on. I screwed up, but I'm going to make it okay.
I went full Hoss in a cul-de-sac the other day.
What'd you do?
I was going door-to-door sales, and I said, "You guys, I know you're in there, and I have my product line, and I'm going to stand here until you buy some of my pillows."
You was doing door-to-door sales?
Door-to-door sales in my own neighborhood, so everybody knows me.
Yeah. Do you find that people are less inclined to open the door because of this pandemic?
What? No, they know who I am. And they say, "Oh, no, Lance Daughters, we already have enough of your candles and stuff." But they don't know that I always have new stuff, like Tragedy Charms.
That would have been
a perfect trauma charm to put on your bracelet. It just sings bad things that happen in your life, like addiction and, like the opioid epidemic is affecting so many families, and just get a little pill for that. And then you put on, whatever it is.
This is one of Amy's most wonderful product lines. I don't know if you know about this, Dirk, or if you're interested in buying it. It's how they've got charm bracelets. This is a tragedy bracelet, and you can buy a little tragedy charms or trauma charms from any bad things ever happened to you. She's got, you can see it right there. Hold up your wrist there, Amy.
You have a broken heart, yep. Or like a, this bridge of San Francisco if your husband goes gay.
It's the bridge to San Francisco. Hey, did that ever happen to you?
Happened to a friend of mine.
Yeah, yeah. Is that what they call it?
And I said, "I got the charm for you."
Hey, that's perfect.
And then I gave her a little bottle of Jack Daniels too, because that's for alcoholism. But she isn't that big a drinker. So
Yeah.
She couldn't really. I mean, it runs in her family a little bit. So.
Well, at least you just gave her a small bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first step to getting help is putting a tragedy bracelet on your arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Well, so now, all right, Dirk, now I got so many questions for you. Now, you must have met over time as a child all of the other cast members on Bonanza.
I did indeed. I met every single one of them. Yeah.
Which one gave the best Christmas presents?
Good question.
They're all cheap. They didn't give any of us anything.
You're kidding me. After all those years, that's long time.
Yeah, it was a long time. I haven't gotten over it, but, you know, maybe one of these days one of their children will send something. I hope so.
What about cattle? They own all of the Ponderosa. Why wouldn't they share anything with you?
Well, you know, some people just don't get what it is to be generous, you know.
Yep.
That's what episode is that?
Well, this one, in fact, generosity, you know, is to be frowned upon. I mean, you don't want to share anything if it's all about amassing as much power and money as you possibly can. That's the American way. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That's
the
true.
The promised land. It's ours.
Hey, yep. Dirk, we heard that Lorne Greene, he had a house that was modeled after the Ponderosa Ranch. You ever go to that house?
No, I have not. Now, I'd heard the same thing about Michael Landon.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, he actually had a replica built up in the hills above Beverly Hills on a 5-acre piece of land, which tells you how much money that sucker was making.
That's all I want to know, because he did Bonanza, and then he was on Little House on the Prairie for all that time. And then he was on that goddamn Highway to Heaven.
Right.
And I just think this guy must have had an insatiable desire for money.
Yeah, I think he probably did. Yeah.
Couldn't
stop. He was a commissionary like me.
Nice.
Yeah, the more money you bring in for the company, the more money you get back out of it. And then you go to the Golden Bridge.
The more people he brought to heaven, the more money he'd get?
Yes.
Wow. Is that how Highway to Heaven works?
The more employees he had, the more he could get closer to, you get up in the levels of heaven. There are different levels of heaven. And he was probably like, he's in the diamond sky, platinum level at very least.
Wow. And it's like a toll road to heaven more likely.
Yeah.
I didn't know any of this about heaven. This is all new.
Well, you're going to find out if you're lucky.
Yeah, oh, I know I'm going to heaven. I made an arrangement. I'm definitely going there with all the monsters I've slaughtered. I've killed. Yeah. I can't even tell you how many vampires I've slaughtered and sent straight to hell. You ever have any experiences, Dirk, with vampires or mummies or Frankensteins, anything like that ever come upon you?
Well, my wife and I are both huge monster movie fans.
Oh, brother.
So we've probably seen every single monster movie that's ever been made at least once.
Uh-huh.
But and I think that maybe that's protected me against real monsters, you know. But I'd fight one if I had to.
You sure would. I know you would. If you got any of that Oss Cartwright blood in you, you'd take him.
Does your wife have a birthday coming up?
She does. I mean, almost immediately.
I have a great gift idea. Yeah? It's something I made myself. It was just for fun. And then it's just turned into this crazy profit-making thing. I'm a profiteer about it because it's a goat tether. It's something I tether myself to a lead-weighted stake in the living room or wherever, just so I can't get to the refrigerator or other places I feel like I shouldn't be. Or I put it on the front lawn. I can go outdoors to stay away from, you know, just stuff that I shouldn't eat and stuff. It's a goat tether for women. Wow.
Well, that's just such an interesting and good idea, I would say.
Yeah. It's so you don't have to have willpower anymore. It's just like, I'm staked.
Yeah. And, you know, like the way you'll do, you put a goat on a tether and you hope that the goat is going to eat all the grass. And then once they've done it, you move the tether and they eat some more of the grass. So it can be done that way. It's not just to keep you from doing things.
Yeah.
It's to get you to do things that are within your reach.
Yeah, no, some things I should finish. They put me near my kale chips. I should finish the whole bag rather than throwing it out after one taste. But that's terrible.
What a coincidence. My wife one time met Tammy Faye Baker at an airport.
Is that right?
She saw, and she was walking behind her getting on the plane, and she noticed that Tammy Faye Baker had goat hooves instead of feet.
You're kidding me.
No. Interesting, huh?
I'm not at all surprised to hear that, because I know that they commune with the devil in certain ways. And, come on, open your eyes, people.
No, there's the good Christians, and then there's the other Christians who aren't good but are faking so hard that you can't tell. And I've got to figure out a new product to figure out which ones are bad and which ones are good.
You mean we're surrounded by people who may not be what they seem?
Witches.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm worried about witches. But I just can't even imagine how difficult it would be to buy shoes if you have goat hooves.
Right? Well, you just buy horseshoes.
You'd be able to get to be teeny tiny.
And Phillies, the hoof is a shoe. A hoof is a shoe.
A hoof is a shoe.
Is that where the term being a hoofer came from, I wonder?
Oh. Yeah, I think in the old days, most of the movie dancers were part goat.
Ah, of course.
Human hands, but their hind quarters was hooved.
Your wife ever lost a friend, to argument? You could get her a pendant, and it's a balloon. It's a forgotten birthday balloon.
Well, I don't think she's ever lost an argument, at least not with me.
Yep.
I've been there, my friend, and now I'm living in a shipping container.
Yeah, that's right. We Mutt's had a difficult love life. And speaking of difficult love lives, the characters on this television program, Bonanza, have some of the most difficult love lives you've ever seen in your life. Unbelievable bad luck with their love lives. Wouldn't you say that, Dirk?
Yeah, curse of the Cartwrights.
Curse? Is that what they call it? I never heard that before.
Curse of the Cartwrights.
Yeah. If you're an actress in those days and you are booked to be on Bonanza, you knew that, the end was near.
You knew you were getting a nice death scene in a bed, of tuberculosis or something.
Envelope, please.
Man, that's true. Hey, did you ever spend any time on the set of Bonanza when they were shooting the TV show?
I actually did, yes. That was, in those days, they shot like 11 months out of the year. I mean, it was ridiculous. The schedules were pretty onerous. Really, one of the only ways to spend time with my dad was to spend time on the set with him, yeah.
Wow. Do you have any memories of memorable things you saw shot? It seems that when we watch them, we can think to ourselves, hey, little Dirk was sitting there watching this.
I usually tuned out when they'd actually start shooting because it was, the process is dull, again and again and again. But one of the things that my dad would do when he'd get busy is he'd ask somebody working on the show who had some time to take me around and, take care of me, babysit me, basically. Uh-huh. And I'd end up in a makeup chair usually, and then the wardrobe people would put wardrobe on me, and pretty soon I looked like, a small person in a Western. And one day, Michael Landon was directing an episode, and he saw me, and they were doing a saloon scene. Mm. And he picked me up and carried me over to the middle of the room and sat me down. And suddenly I was surrounded by extras and everybody had beers in front of them and dance girls right above us. And it was wonderful. I couldn't find myself on the episode, though. I tried and tried and tried, but I was just too small.
Darn it. So do you think you looked like somebody brought their child to a saloon, or did you have like a mustache and... Or something like
that. Oh, no, I had like a fake beard and a mustache.
Oh, you did?
And the bullets across my chest and, the whole nine yards.
Yeah. Wow. So it was like a little person in that saloon. That's funny. Yeah, sure. Well, that's too bad that we can't find you in the episode, but maybe they'll digitally enhance it.
An eye out for you. Do you happen to know what episode it was when we get to it?
I have the foggiest. I think it might have been Wayne Newton might have been there because I remember thinking, why does this man sound like he sounds when he sings? He's a very nice guy. He seemed like a really nice guy. And I think he was in that episode, but I'm not 100% sure. But you said keep an eye out for him. That's another thing I noticed about this particular episode, this Truckee episode. The character Willard Trump has one eye.
And, yes, he does.
And Pa, literally, as he's walking him to the door to go run an errand, he said, "We keep an eye out for us."
Oh, yeah. Don't say that to a one-eyed man.
Oh, he was slamming him. He knew what he was doing.
I mean, what the hell?
He got him.
Yeah.
That's the walk away. Don't even know you're insulted until about 5 days later and you seethe with rage.
That's right.
He probably keeps that missing eye in his pocket, too. He's like, "Well, what does he mean? I should give him my eye? Keep my eye on him? Slip it into his pocket?"
Yeah.
I'll tell you, if I ever lost an eye, I'd carry it around with me just for pranks, put it in somebody's drink, stuff like that. Just to have a laugh.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a laugh.
Here's looking at you, pal.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Man, oh, man, I can't believe we're talking to somebody who was on the set of Bonanza. Now, wait a minute. Were you on the set way up by the Lake Tahoe, or sometimes they was indoors on what appears to be a stage? In fact, sometimes they'd shoot scenes where one of the people in the scene is outside and one of them is inside.
Yeah, it was. You could pretty much tell, couldn't you, when they went to a soundstage? It was pretty
evident. I'd say so.
Yeah.
Unless you had one eye and it was a bad eye. They would shoot in Lake Tahoe about 2 weeks out of each year. And that became like a vacation for all the families.
Oh, yeah.
And they would just they would shoot an episode while they're there. But primarily they would set a second unit, a small group of crew members out with various cast members and shoot them just riding across a valley or up a hill or on a snowy peak or whatever that they could then insert later into episodes during the year, during the course of the year.
Wow. Would they split the talent below the line and above the line and have you fight over who deserves to stay on the location?
Well, you know who won that fight.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Daddy
Haas. Yeah.
Haas, so I don't know how I don't know how the other half lived. I'm sorry.
No, who knows? Who cares? Man, oh, man. Hey, I got one more question for you before we take probably a break, and then after that we'll get into a blow-by-blow of this incredible episode of Bonanza, the Tricky Strip.
You didn't watch it.
Yeah, which Amy didn't watch.
I watched 113.
Oops-a-daisy. Well, Dirk, did you ever get to ride Chubb, which was the name of Haas's horse? Horse named Chubb.
I might have. I don't remember. I did ride. They did let us ride horses once in a while when we were there.
Yeah.
But, Chubb was reinforced for my dad.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I just, come on. I mean, he would hurt other horses because of his size.
How did they do that? Like a metal brace?
Yeah. They implanted titanium rods in his legs. No, I'm kidding.
No.
They just found the largest horse that they could find that had no feeling below the knees, and then let him go.
Yeah. Chubb is a large horse.
Chubb was a chubber.
Yeah, he sure was. Okay. So it sounds like you rode some horses, but you're not sure whether you got on Chubb.
I can't say for sure. No, I don't. I don't remember.
Man,
I'm going
to
tell my husband about that he could just reinforce my legs. So I'll just keep going. Because sometimes when I get tired, he gets mad and he says, "Keep up with me." I say, "Well, maybe if you reinforce my legs." Oh, my God.
Anything to keep their marriage alive, whatever it takes, because you guys have something special. All right.
Well, I got another charm. It's it's a gas station rose. It's for domestic violence.
I've never heard of a gas station rose. What is that?
It's a rose, but then it's wrapped in a little bit of plastic. But you can see all the details on the charm.
You say what you're talking about. I didn't know that's what they was called.
They
it's
sell
a gas
roses?
Station rose.
Okay.
What you pick up when you're on your way back from 24 hours in the... in the pokey for maybe or maybe not intimidating your wife and family.
You want to make something up to somebody and you got to get gas. You pick them up a gas station rose.
And then if you're, a survivor of that situation, get a charm.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. That's a beautiful story. All right, folks. Well, We are going to take a little break here, and then when we come back, man, oh, man, we're going to dig right into Season 1, Episode 11, The Truckee Strip, with the help of our dear friend now, Dirk Blocker. Holy shit. All right. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to Bananas for Bonanza. It's me and Mutt Taylor and Amy Slaverson and Dirk Blocker, our guest for this episode. Oh, my God. Hey, you're on that Brooklyn Nine-Nine, right?
Yes, sir, I am. You've been for the last 7 years, yes.
7 years. Wow.
Unbelievable. Unreal.
You're a lawman on that show, aren't you?
I'm a lawman, indeed.
But a city slicker, too.
A city slicker and probably someone who should have retired some time ago.
Yeah, you and the other Scully guy, you're just kind of like, what are you, a couple of you past their primes?
Yeah, guy? we're just trying to survive until our pension kicks in is basically how it works.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So you done 7 seasons on there, and what do they do, about 25 a season? God only knows how many that is, but it's going to take you a while to get up to 431, God, isn't it?
Unbelievable, I know, yeah. And those were one-hour episodes that, you know, took days and days. I mean, they shot it like a movie. They shot them. Unbelievable.
These days you can make an hour of television and it's only really 44 minutes. Back in those days, it was pushing 50.
Yeah. Right.
As we damn well know. All right. Well, folks, this is a fantastic episode. So once again, a member of the Cartwright clan falls victim to love at first sight. Blood is shed over land ownership, and there are two absolutely outstanding bare-fisted brawls in this episode. We're going to watch them both. And there's a fine performance by James Coburn.
Oh boy.
Who would go on to appear in such classic films as The Magnificent Seven, The Great Escape, and Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit.
That's where I know him from. You know, I was originally in Magnificent Seven when it was called The Mazin' Eight, but I didn't get along with Robert Vaughn. He was a real prick and a dandy, and so I walked, and they just said, well, fuck it. We'll call it The Magnificent Seven. Let's shoot the movie.
Oh, man. I didn't know that, because Amazing Eight sounds better to me. It's just got a better ring to it.
Mazin' Eight, with a little apostrophe.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Even better. Take out that A.
And who no G it? At the end, so it's actually an apostrophe at the beginning and the end, and it just looks like the, quote, Mazin' Eight. And it was hard to market. I think they fired me for that reason.
Oh, that's why?
Yeah.
It sounded like before you said you walked off the set. Now it sounds like maybe they fired you.
Well, can it be both?
Sure. Yeah. Fine with me.
God, I love Jimmy Coburn, though. That man, he can do no wrong for me. And when he showed up in this episode, you got the Cartwrights and Jimmy Coburn.
It's too much. He plays Pete Jessup, and he's a son of a bitch.
Ooh, he's a bad one. Amy, I'm sad for you. You missed this episode.
Oh, I am so sad, but that doesn't mean I don't have more merch. I mean, pistols are now available on my website, lotsdaughters.com. They are fully operational ladies' pistols that say family together. Family together.
I love it. Ladies' These are like pistols.
Little derringers that might go like in a garter under your bustle
yes,
or something?
Yes, yes. Wow. And they come in white, pink, and then off like a taupe.
Would it be too untoward if I were to buy a set of those?
Oh, that's fine. No, that's fine.
Because
I can't give you a deal. My best friends pay the most. I can't give you a deal. You love me.
Hashtag girl boss. That's how it gets done.
Yeah. Now, I know those garters normally go around the thigh of a lady, but I've been working out since I've been on my own in the shipping container. And so I got my arms pretty big, and I'm figuring if I were to put one of those garter guns around my arms, it might fit. And then I could do a little fast draw just by giving myself a little hug, grab the derringers and shoot.
That's an excellent idea, and it's such. Well, it makes me think of a ruffled top as well. How it could really work that way—a ruffled.
I'd do that. We'll talk later. We can do a whole consultation.
Of course.
Hey, this is all making me uncomfortable to think of you with ladies' garters on your arms and little derringers tucked into your to your newly bulging biceps and a frilly shirt. But it just makes me uncomfortable.
There's been a lot of trouble in my life lately. I should mention, too, in full disclosure, this episode's called The Truckee Strip, and my shipping container is parked outside of the Truckee Strip, which is a strip joint here in northern Nevada. And there's been a lot of goings on. See, the reason I don't have my truck anymore is I lost in a game of curb dice, and so I got some fellas after me. But we don't have to talk about that. Let's just move on.
Wow, that's a big bet for curb dice. That tends to be more nickel and dimey.
They're huge dice.
Oh, I see. That makes sense. Pretty big curb or what?
Yeah, and it was like them Dyson Prices Right with it, and we played it against a dam.
Okay, now I get it. Yeah. All right, well, this episode features an actress by the name of Adrienne Hayes, and she's had a lot of one-time appearances and a lot of TV shows. Only show that ever had her back more than once was some soap opera, Guiding Light or something like that. Everybody else got one taste and said that'll do. And then we've got the fellow by the name of Charles Horvath. And Charles Horvath plays Willard Trump, and he was also in The Wackiest Ship in the Army, which Jack Warden was the star of. We got to get our hands on that show because it seems like Bonanza was like the feeder show to The Wackiest Ship in the Army. So I got to see that. Well, this episode begins where some guys is cutting down a tree, and then Willard Trump, who's got an eye patch on, and he is a rancher who works for the Cartwrights, he rides up. And he sees him cutting down this tree, and it seems to be a problem. Right?
How many episodes now have begun with a tree being cut down? We're into about 3/5 of them?
I'd say. Yeah.
With none of the cast of characters in the first scene.
No. That's right. They often don't start that. It starts with a real beautiful establishing shot of the Lake Tahoe, I suppose. And then you cut back into the stage, and he's cutting down a fake tree.
This must be that B-roll you was talking about, Dirk, where they go out and shoot with actors and such.
Yeah, and they felled a lot of trees on the B-roll, I suspect.
Yeah, that's right. You get the wide shot of the whole big tree coming down. It's beautiful. And then you see James Coburn, and he said, and then there's a banker, a fancy banker. They're all out there in the woods. The banker wanted to oversee the cutting down of this tree, I suppose. And you get the feeling they got some evil plan going on, and it involves riling up the Cartwrights. Bad idea, boys. Terrible idea.
By the way, B-roll is what my husband calls our sex life.
Well, that's not bad. It could be, you know, you got C, D, and F. So sounds like you're doing fine, above average. Well, okay.
If you get those leg supports, you know, then you're going to be right up there, you know, being an A before you know it.
And I'm getting into Christian sexual aids because places like Truckee Strip, no offense to that small business, we need to have products that are available from Christian sources for pleasure.
Yeah, I agree. I've always been searching for Christian porn, and I find it's few and far between. I'd like it to be just as, you know, dark and dirty, but sanctioned by God and with a man and a woman who are married, but then they can still get as freaky as they want.
Yeah.
If you just heard the sounds, is what I'm thinking, like a podcast, and then you just heard the sound of what was happening, but people who weren't vocal. Mm. So you just heard.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just, that's from our home.
You can't see it here, but Amy was just having a bowl of soup.
And it did say, if you close your eyes, it sounds just like sex. Tell yeah, you turn, something turn about
got soup. Me a little
it got me going, too. Yeah. When we're done here, I'm going to find the wife. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, brother.
I'm going straight to the Truckee Finder. Strip.
Yeah, I think I'll head on out to the whorehouse. Now, that's funny with all these podcasts out there. There's no pornographic podcasts, is there?
Oh, I'm sure there is.
You think there is?
I think there probably is.
Okay, well, as soon as we're done, I'm gonna look it up on Google. Okay, so now what? All right, yeah, the Cartwrights come along. Sport, Buck, Cochise, and Chubb with above them their corresponding humans, which is Adam, Ben, Little Joe, and Hoss. And they come out, and then we have a real weird... They chase off the guys who's cutting down that tree. And Little Joe takes off in one particular direction. And I believe he rides on to the concho, though we don't quite learn it yet, until later. And he comes upon a young woman who is hiding in the bushes with her dress off. And... Yeah, but don't worry, because under her dress, she has a full dress.
There's no telling if she's not got a dress on under that. Russian nesting dresses.
Could very well be.
That's a great idea.
There's no explanation at this point as to what this woman is doing in the wilderness with her dress off. It's just a total mystery. Later, we learn that what she likes to do is go out there and splash her feet in a little creek.
Yeah, the only thing we've learned and been told is that she does this every day.
She does this every day, but it still doesn't explain why she had to take her dress off. She takes off her dress so she can splash her little feet in that creek is apparently... What she does to get her jollies off, that Amy, what's her name? Amy Bishop. But Little Joe comes upon her, and he is immediately struck, his love struck, and they have a scene where every time he speaks, behind him is an actual tree in the sky, and the wind is blowing through his hair because that scene was shot outside. And every time they cut to her, she is on a phony baloney set with a fake spring between her. It's unbelievable. Just cut back and forth between outside and inside.
She was probably pulling on her goat tether at that point.
She may well have been.
Yeah, and I have to believe that they shot this together. So it's crazy to think that they built an outdoor set that they were just shooting half outdoor and half indoor with an open wall. That's crazy.
Come on. You know, it costs a little bit of money to send an actor to Lake Tahoe.
Oh, okay. See, now we get the inside scoop.
Inside scoop. That's right.
They're not going to send Adrienne Hayes all the way up to Lake Tahoe. Hell no. They'll shoot her part down on the what stage was it here where they do it in Hollywood? You remember?
It was at Paramount Studios, and I know that they did stay on the one stage there for the longest time, but I don't remember now what I might have been number 9, but I'm not sure.
Number 9, stage 9 at Paramount. So they got her out of Paramount, and she probably had a street park. And then she's in there doing her scene. Plenty of street parking over there.
But hell road.
Back in those days. They give you a walk on. They give you a walk on. It's okay.
Oh, yeah, they give you a walk on. Yeah, absolutely. Just bring your ID. But she didn't get in the parking structure, I guarantee
you. Shoot your scene, walk out onto Melrose, or walk down to that store that only sells fireplace mantles that you always drive by. Yeah, it's a nice
afternoon. And if it's a half-hour walk-away lunch, you could do a lot worse than Lucy's Adobe. Not that I've ever been anywhere near Hollywood.
Me either.
Nope. But then what happens? Okay, so he falls in love. Well, but I was going to say, I think it was an intentional stylistic choice that the two of them are in such different worlds. You know what I mean? He's outside, she's inside. They're in totally different dimensions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're from different worlds because this is our Romeo and Juliet story. She's
two
a bishop.
Tribes.
Yeah, he's a Cartwright.
Two houses, except only one house. The other's outside.
Yeah,
both
exactly.
Alike in name.
Alike in name. Yeah. So then we find out, that a fellow by the name of Luther Bishop owns the concho, that's a piece of land, and there's the fellows who was cutting down the tree was Bishop's men, and that's the Truckee Strip, and the Truckee Strip sits between the concho and the Ponderosa, and
Palestine.
There was, just like Palestine, right?
Yeah, the 58th parallel, the Demilitarized Zone.
I was thinking that too, Amy, because you talked about how the Ponderosa is Israel or something. I don't always fully listen to when you talk about that, but you've said something like that.
It's okay.
That's all right.
It's just the emotional truth that you need to get out of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just listen to the emotions behind the words. That's what my husband says.
Yeah. Hey, Dirk, can you confirm this, Amy's theory that Michael Landon is Jesus, and that this show is it takes place in the Holy Land? Any insights you have on that at all would be helpful.
Well, I can't say for sure, but I do know that he was deathly afraid of having his hair cut.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Like a Samson.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely like a Samson. Yes, exactly that. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how much Jesus and Samson hung out. But
a lot.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, in that case, yes.
But
I confirm it.
Okay. Thank you. That's big.
That is exactly what I was looking for, was confirmation of my own prejudices.
There you go.
And thank you so much.
That's exciting, right? So there you go. Everything's
it always
right about
feels
everything.
So good.
So he has short hair through pretty much all of Bonanza, and it's like that's his first show and he doesn't have a lot of pull, but by the time he gets to Little House on the Prairie, he says, "You want me to do this show? I ain't cut my hair. You want me to go on the Highway to Heaven? I ain't cut my hair," basically.
Right. Well, you know, everybody except he on the show wore hair pieces because everybody was bald headed.
What are you talking about?
So Michael wore a short hair piece. I mean, he tucked all of that hair into underneath a scalp holder. I call it the scalp holder.
So Michael Landon, when he was on Bonanza, had the same kind of long, luxurious hair we're used to from the Prairie days, but he would tuck it up underneath like an Elvis Presley ducktail updo.
Precisely. He had a very small head, so he was able to get that all underneath that skull cap, basically.
This is some real inside information. Oh, yeah. Now, wait a minute. Are you trying to tell us that Lorne Greene and Mr. Purnell there, that these fellows, when you saw them off set, they was bald headed?
Well, I think if you just kind of looked closely in the episodes, you might be able to tell. It looked like a piece of lettuce on their head, basically.
You're kidding me.
I thought they just had lettuce hair.
What about your own father? Did he?
Oh God, yeah. He didn't like hair pieces, so they just paint his head dark.
This is outstanding information. I'm just going to stare at their hair from now on. I never even thought about it. Never thought about it once in my life.
Well, it's given me great insight. Now I can spot a hair piece of a mile away.
Oh, me too. I got perfect wig dar. But then what about Hop Sing? Is that a real hat or is it a hat piece?
Hey, good question.
You know, I never saw him without the hat, so I'm not sure.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah,
now
he's got
that I
long
think
hair.
Of it, then that makes Michael Lynn even more Jesus-like, because it's like everyone who surrounds him is wearing sort of a holy covering of their head, sort of a hijab.
Yeah, a hijab. I like that. I like a hijab. Now, okay, so it's the Truckee Strip is between the Ponderosa and the Concho, and these two parties have been warring over it for a long time. Turns out Willard Trump got shot in the eye by Luther Bishop a long time ago during these wars. And not only that, but Pete Jessup, that's James Coburn, his brother was killed during one of these Truckee Strip wars. But a court order settled it. Court order says that land belongs to the Cartwrights. Well, you think it settles it, but Luther Bishop says, "That's my land, court order or not." So he's not accepting, he don't accept it. So this is like a tinderbox. And now Pete Jessup is out there throwing matches at it or whatever. He's trying to get a war going again over the Truckee Strip, and because it has to do something with a fancy banker named, is that Jason Carter, I guess? There's always some element of the plot where I just say, you lost me. And this time it's whatever the banker wants to sell the timber on the Truckee Strip and somehow believes that if there's a war, a reinvigorated war between the parties, it'll help him get that wood.
Well, yeah, he wants to buy the timber from Bishop, but he's forcing Bishop to sell because he won't give Bishop a loan.
Yeah. But is his scheme like there's going to be a war here and Bishop's going to say it's not worth the trouble? I'll sell the land.
Well, there's also a part where I tune out too, and that was it. So I don't know.
So little Joe and Amy Bishop is getting closer together, and he says we don't have to inherit the hates of our families. And that's when I says, God damn it, this is Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah,
that's the moment where it came together for me. Yep. Hey, Dirk, you ever meet any of the writers for Bonanza?
There was one fellow named Richard Collins, who I think was the script supervisor. He was
story editor.
He was story editor. Yeah, I believe that was his title, and I'm not sure what years, but yeah, I met him. But no, otherwise, I don't think I knew any of the writers. No.
I'd love to know what they were doing over there.
I was a child, but during these days.
Yes, I know. But they never said he would be entertained in the writer's room. Send him over there.
Yeah. Invitations to the writer room is hard enough to come by when you're an adult. So
writer's room / daycare center. That's how it usually works.
Give him to Collins. Collins will take him down to the bar.
I like the writers stole the storyline from Shakespeare, because that's what sometimes I just borrow someone's business plan entirely, I'm just going to, because that's what I did. I said, Mary and Martha was the most popular Christian women's marketing company.
Oh, are you all right? Take a breath.
You need to take some gummies. Take some gummies and powder.
I only do chewables.
Oh, okay.
Chewables are also right.
Well, drink your
powerful
soup. I'm worried about you.
Okay.
You're not alone, though, because Shakespeare stole from the best. He himself was a thief. He stole from, Pyramus and Thisbe is Romeo and Juliet. And hell, I know, again, it doesn't look like I'm a huge Shakespeare head, but all of his plays were stolen, with the exception of his biographical later play, The Tempest, and the Merry Wives of Windsor, so commissioned by Queen Elizabeth herself.
And that one stinks.
Yeah, I agree, man.
That's a stinker. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Shakespeare is a thief, and so he wouldn't mind old story editor Collins stealing this story from him.
Let's just say he wouldn't get along with the Cartwrights. He's not on the up and up.
I'm sure you're right about that. Yeah. Yep. Cartwrights is honest. Well, okay. Oh, and then Pete Jessup, James Coburn, steals three horses. Something going on there. He steals three horses. And then they ride up and they shoot a guy. There's two guys camping out in the woods, and Jessup and his buddies, who are all riding Cartwright Ranch horses, Ponderosa horses, come up on these two guys who are camping out, and they just shoot one of them. And the other one is not terribly perturbed by the fact that his friend got shot. He takes it very much in stride. He just kind of says, hey, why'd you cut him down? Just curious, pass the time, make some conversation.
Yeah, but he's the big Lebowski of the Old West. Whatever.
Yeah, he takes it. He takes it. I guess
death
I'm on
a comes
burial.
To all of us.
Yeah.
I have that on a dish towel. Death comes to all of us.
Oh, man. That sounds good. I'd like to have one of those, because sometimes I do forget. I'll forget for a few hours at a time that death's coming. But anyways, what you got? And they're in disguise. And the whole point is, I guess, is Pete Jessup and his buddies are trying to make it seem as though the Cartwrights committed a wanton murder on Luther Bishop's land on the Concho. It's all about whipping up this goddamn war over the Truckee Strip, right? Am I missing anything so far?
No, divide and conquer. That's right. That's what they were after.
Conquer. Right. Yeah. They're wearing bandanas so you can't see their faces, and it's plausible deniability. Oh, I'm a Cartwright, but they wasn't.
Yeah. And then you got, Willard Trump sees a tree being cut down. He tells Paul what's going on. And then we cut to a little scene by the brook where Amy is reading some Shakespeare. And Joe, I believe this is what happens. I might have zoned out. Joe says, put that book away. That Shakespeare doesn't know what he's talking about. And then he speaks in colloquial terms. The mistress eyes nothing like the sun Shakespeare sonnet basically puts it in his own words. Isn't that about right?
Yeah. I mean, is he knocking Shakespeare because he can do better?
He kind of says this sonnet is stupid. How it really is. And then he paraphrases the sonnet.
Well, if they believed Shakespeare was a thief, then Little Joe would have to be opposed to anything that he had ever written.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Little Joe would never steal anything.
No way.
Just that little girl's heart. That's all.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
That's right. Which she gave up freely.
Yeah, I believe she did. She fell in love. And she, by the way, is another one of these women characters we've seen on this show who's just as simple as a child. I don't know how
that's
old.
That's how I am. That's how I am. I don't do any of this politics stuff or anything. No. I just like go, I don't want to hear any of it. And just give me my crafts and my small business. And that's all I want to think about.
All she wants to do is get her dress off and get her feet wet and read her books. She loves to read books. And that's it. And then she doesn't seem to understand anything outside of that.
Yeah, she wants to get her dress off so her other dress can get a suntan.
That's right. And it looks great.
I used to do that. I used to triple dress.
Really? Triple dress. So that's how deep it goes?
Yeah, you triple dress.
Triple dress. Not a bad idea.
It's so good because you have the one dress, you know, so just kind of like what you're showing the outside world. And then you have your personal dress where it's like, oh, I'm just being myself. And then you have your strategy dress where she's like, no, I am not interested.
What's that dress made of, that strategy one? Is that like Kevlar?
It's a washable plastic with a felted interior, like a tablecloth.
Oh, right.
Is it all gingham and check like a tablecloth too?
Whatever you want.
God, I want. I just never gotten past dress two, so I don't know, and I'm wondering what's to come. It's like getting to a level of a video game.
But there's a reason you haven't got past dress two.
I know.
She's gay. I'm just kidding. She's not. Nobody is.
She could be. Her name's
Nobody
Clark.
Is. Nobody yeah. is. Yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that. Man. Well, I'll tell you, three dresses wouldn't hurt the women of the Bonanza. Might help them survive a bullet. Yeah. Or what takes this woman out is bizarre, but it's real weird. All right, so now we have a thing where the Cartwrights ride up on the encampment of guys who's cutting down the trees to sell to Jason Carter, and there's a Chinese fellow there, and he's got a knife. And I don't know why they showed this Chinese guy with a knife. I don't know why, but he ducks into a tent with a very scary looking knife. And then
When they were writing that scene is when Dirk was brought over to the writer's room for daycare, and they just missed a beat of it because they was watching Dirk and said, we'll get to that later.
Dirk put that knife down.
Yeah, it gives you a momentary misdirect that maybe Willard Trump has been killed instead. But it's for what purpose? I don't know. But basically what happens is Willard Trump, for some reason, goes in there and strangles to death this young Chinese fella. He just strangles him straight up, strangles him to death. And now I'm going to show you the first clip because, you know, we're recording this and there's an election going on and everybody's talking about, you know, another Trump, this Donald Trump, right? But I'm about to show you a moment that if they put it in an ad, a political ad, it would just settle this whole thing once and for all. Ready? Watch this. Here we go. This is Ben Cartwright responding. Hang on, I got to share my damn screen. Ben Cartwright responding to Willard Trump having killed this Chinese boy. Here's what he says.
Trump is like an animal.
See that?
Oh, the biggest anti-endorsement you could have in a political ad.
Right? It'd be all done. You got Ben Cartwright literally saying you're like an animal. You're finished.
Wow, somebody out there take that footage and make an anti-Trump. I mean, I don't go into politics either.
No, I don't care. I always write in Ben Cartwright, as you know, on my ballot every year. You know,
I write doesn't matter in to Chubb.
Me. You write in Chubb?
Yeah.
He'd be a good president. Better than any of these city slickers we usually get.
Yeah.
I did.
Ben Cartwright.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
No, not at all. No, please.
I take a couple of horse pills, like actual horse pills, every election.
How long does that knock you out for?
Ow, you know, it's just not long enough to wake up and go, what happened?
Yeah,
that's like a jawbreaker, right? Like you got to work on those.
Oh yeah. Oh. Sorry.
Yep. What were you gonna say there, Dirk?
Oh, I just thought, you know, Ben Cartwright could, or Lauren Green could have, could offer Trump, President Trump, his hairpiece. And then he could do away with all this nonsense. People always making fun of his pathetic hair.
Yeah. That hair is, I have always felt personally insulted by it. It's a personal insult to me.
I've seen better hair on thatched roofs before.
I agree. Well, now I'm going to show the rest of this scene. I'm just going to let it roll because right after this is when there is the first of the two epic brawls I want to show. And this is really the one, because this is it. This is the one where Haas goes full Haas, and it is a thing of beauty. Here we go. Let's roll on from here. Now, starts with Ben Cartwright. Oh, he hands his gun off because it's time for a bare-fisted brawl with Trump. Oh. And it looks like Ben Cartwright's going to get strangled to death, and but here comes Haas.
Or a light beer commercial.
Little Joe rides up, but that's not important. None of this is important. Oh, there goes Cochise. Now here's Haas beating the hell out of Willard Trump. Oh, man. An axe. Yep. Now the bad guy seems to always pick up some kind of a weapon. That was beautiful. And that'll do it. Dang.
God, that is like watching Michelangelo paint the Sistine Chapel.
Yes, it is. That's a real good one, particularly that part where Haas sort of grabs him by the legs and flips him over his back.
I think James Coburn might have showed that to him.
Are you serious?
Well, it looked like something right out of like Flint to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or one of his last movies, Hudson Hawk, where he was riddled with arthritis.
Oh, that sounds good. I'd like to see that. I like to see people in their worst state. Dirk, was your father a professional wrestler before going into acting, as so often happens these days?
No, he wasn't a professional wrestler. However, he boxed in college and,
oh, he did.
Yeah. He was the Golden Gloves champion of Texas. As a matter of fact, heavyweight champion, undefeated.
He's also a war hero, right? Didn't he get the Purple Heart?
Yeah, but you know, he didn't. That wasn't much. I mean, he didn't really talk about that a whole lot.
Man,
he wasn't.
That's
a big
impressive
deal to him.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
But you know, when Trump was wielding the axe, I thought it was very interesting that one of Ben's sons would prevent Pa from coming to his rescue. I mean, the guy had a fucking axe.
Yeah, there's a lot of conflict between the Cartwrights. In fact, coming up is a scene that I thought I'd never see till the day I died.
I know what you mean, but I want to take a moment to agree there that was an odd moment. So a fella picks up an axe and he's swinging it at your son. And so you pull your gun and you say, well, I'm putting an end to this. And then one of your other sons goes, no. Let's not be hasty. I'll bet you Haas can handle this axe. That's crazy.
And if not, there'll be more for me to inherit.
Yeah, that's what he's thinking. Son of a bitch. Goddamn. Adam. Well, so that was a beautiful fight there. I think that was one of the best what we've seen yet in 11 episodes. That's right. Now, little Joe comes up, and I don't remember what exactly all gets into it here, but, little Joe says he's going to bring this murdered Chinese boy back to his father over at Luther Bishop's ranch house. And for some reason, all the other Cartwrights are dead set against it. They say, you can't do that. I guess they think that little Joe's going to get shot as soon as he shows his face over there, even though he's doing a nice thing of bringing this dead body over there. And it gets to be a real fight to the point that little Joe pulls a gun on his own father.
I just about died. I didn't know what way was up.
Me neither. I couldn't believe it.
Knew therapy had to come after that, which kind of happens in this. They do delve into therapy a little bit, you know, talk therapy.
They do.
It's the last chapter of the Bible when Jesus gets armed.
Pulls a gun on God?
Yeah, he doesn't turn the other cheek at all. He turns around with a can of whoop-ass.
What kind of guns is Jesus packing?
Yeah.
He's got his two arms, of course, and then, you know, he's got access to every kind of arms you can get, anything online, stuff from Russia.
He's walking around with Kalashnikovs, Jesus.
Yeah, AK-47s and RPGs and such.
Man, oh my. Well, okay. Now what happens? Oh, he puts his gun away soon enough. And he puts that dead Chinese boy on his horse and rides him over to the concho. And we see his father, and his father is very distraught. And little Joe offers to bury him. And the father says, a man buries his son by himself, which is not something I've ever heard before. But I guess it's a tradition. We see a little bit of between Pete Jessup and little Joe. There's a little bit of friction there. Oh, I forgot to mention earlier. Amy Bishop says, hey, I don't like that Pete Jessup follow me around all the time. And the father says, well, I told him to keep an eye on you. And then they cut to Pete Jessup is just staring at her from outside through the window. I don't think that's what the father had in mind when he said, please keep an eye on my daughter. I don't think
downright creepy.
Yeah. Go creeping in the bushes.
One step too far for me, and I am not a progressive fella.
Yeah. Keep an eye on her, but not when she's alone in her bedroom, please, through the window in the bushes. I guess he could have been more specific.
And she was down to her second dress, and that's just downright untoward.
That's sure not was. Right when you're courting.
I agree. Well, so Joe eventually comes home back to the Ponderosa, and Pa and Joe have a talk. Now, there's an interesting element here where Hoss says to little Joe, he says, hey, it helps to talk things over. You could talk to Pa. It's always helped me in my hard times. And that is not what we've seen so far on this show. There have been times where the whole idea of not talking about it is the remedy.
There was the time where I believe Hoss himself was suffering, and was it Adam was going to go talk to him? And Ben says, no, we'll have no talking in this family, basically.
Yeah.
So this must have just been a different pilot of a show altogether.
Yeah. Ben says, when a man has suffered a tragedy, he must suffer it alone, basically. Stay away from him. Yep. So anyway, this is different. This is a slightly different attitude. But now we have Joe confesses to Pa that he's in love with a bishop, and Pa's like, okay, fine, we'll work it out. And then there's a sort of a parlay between the Cartwrights and the bishops, at which point Luther Bishop says to little Joe, well, go fetch Amy. And he's going to do that very thing. But what he doesn't know is that Pete Jessup has decided that it's time for him to take by force the affections of Amy Bishop. Have I put that in an acceptable way? I don't think so. It's terrible. Pete Jessup just attacks Amy Bishop. He says, and they're in the barn. And little Joe comes in, and this is the second thing I want to show you. I mean, I don't think folks have ever seen anything like this brawl I'm about to show you. This is like, it's a brawl in a barn, and there's just an endless number of weapons that an unprincipled man like Jessup can call upon. Can you see my screen?
No, there it is. Oh,
there it is. Okay, here we go. This is the big climactic brawl between James Coburn, Pete Jessup, who's a big windup. Oh, he throws a punch anybody could have seen coming.
Oh, no.
Little
oh,
Joe
no.
ducks it. Yeah.
Down to her second dress.
She's down to her second dress, lying in a pile of hay, enjoying the fight. These two are fighting. Now here comes with a chain, and he gets flipped, and he's whipping old little Joe with that chain for all he's worth. Oh, man. Unprincipled. It's unprincipled is what it is.
She's having a seizure.
Yeah. Little Joe's getting choked to death with the chain, but he punches old Jessup there. Now Jessup,
no.
I don't know.
What?
I have no idea what
that is. Submarine periscope?
A bridle.
They're both using sticks. Oh, what's next?
No.
Some random piece of wood. More brawling. Now he picks up the first of two pitchforks that will be employed in this fight. This is pitchfork number one. That's the problem with pitchforks. They'll stick in the wall.
Oh,
now you can't use it anymore.
Men's bodies diving.
It's terrible. Oh, the old kick. And here's pitchfork number two. Very different style of pitchfork.
Oh,
and he throws it.
Oh, he missed by a lot.
Yeah.
He really did.
By a body length.
Fight, fight, fight. Oh, what's this, a whip? Now we got a whip.
No, it's a whip.
I've lost track of how many different weapons have been employed in this fight. Hey, little Joe did the old log roll, knock you over. And this is it. Now, little Joe's
got this later marketed as a workout system for your home?
Pete Jessup has taken
Little Joe's gun. He should have started with the gun.
Yeah. Well, Little Joe was decent enough to take his gun off for this bare-fisted brawl like they always do on this show for some reason. And Pete. He stabbed him right in between that space between your chest and your arm.
Oh, no.
The deadliest spot.
The deadliest spot.
Everyone's weakness.
Oh, in your heart crotch.
Now, look what. That's it. That's where pitchfork number two
is. Oh, no, she's dead.
But why is she dead?
She has hay problems.
She has hay fever. Lethal hay fever.
She is dead.
We look over and she's dead and we don't know why.
Well,
is she allergic?
No, it's because Pete Jessup, when he threw pitchfork number two and Little Joe dodged it, it went straight into Amy Bishop and killed her.
She was lying in a bale of straw, though, where you would normally put a pitchfork. So
you can't blame Pete Jessup for saying this pitchfork belongs in the hay.
Yeah.
I tell you what, even though she died, if she had signed up for my eternal life insurance policy, she would be able to pay past her passing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that even if you... Even if you die by your own hand, suicide, you will continue to have those payments come out monthly, you know, so you know that you're taken care of.
Wow. Who does the money go
gone.
To? Who's the money go to?
The insurance company.
Oh. Okay. I think I get it. So this is money you personally are going to collect after you die if you can.
Yeah.
Figure out how. Okay.
You get it in the
afterlife.
In the afterlife.
Okay.
Depending on what level you end up at.
How much does it cost to buy one of these policies?
Oh, it's a real easy in. It's $99.
Oh, all right.
Easy in. Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
Anybody can afford $99. $99. What that? That's three stuffed animals for your kids. $99. That's it. That's maybe a stool, a nice stool, if you're going to buy one.
Yeah.
$99. That's like six packs of cigarettes.
There's a lot of things that could be added up to cost $99, I guess. But all right, everybody, send Amy Sleverson $99 and you can withdraw money in the afterlife. All right. Well, that's it. Another woman down on Bonanza.
What does that make now? We're 11 episodes in and we're probably at about, what, 24 dead women?
Well, you start right out of the gate with three dead women because Ben Cartwright has buried three wives.
That
well,
we know of.
They should take their bodies and make a bone church. My husband and I went to Prague for our honeymoon, and there was a church made of bones. The brothers could make a bone church of their wives.
They should. And then we had, in episode three, Hoss fell in love with a woman who had tuberculosis and died. But that was the true love of his life. And then in episode six, little Joe fell in love with Julia Boulette and, she died. So he's been here before. And then I was trying to remember when, Ben Cartwright proposed marriage to that, actress who in the end ended up with that drunk guy. Did we hear that the two of them had gone off and died together?
I think it's safe to assume.
I think the way that episode ended was, hey, they left town, turns out, and they died on the way.
Was there anyone who spoke up and said, we should have one woman live?
No, I think they pretty much needed to get the women out of the way.
Season after season.
I think in the 400, what did you say, 400 and how many episodes?
31.
431. And I think there were 700 or 800 women who died on that show.
Man, oh man.
Something like that.
First time, shame on me. Second time, shame on you. Shame on me again.
Well, I mean, and every time, too, it seems like, well, I guess this lady is going to be a permanent member of the show now. She's going to, they've found a little parcel of land down by the creek that they're going to build a house on. And
she's her second dress.
Yep. She's going to be around for a while. And then, nope. It doesn't happen.
No,
man.
No. It was really important to get them out of the way, basically.
I guess. Well, it's easier than figuring out how to write for them, I guess.
Can't be done.
Poor Collins, up to it. He's got enough on his plate.
We have emotional depth that's harder to stage than a fight.
Yeah, you got that right.
But that last fight scene with the three in that barn, that was a lot of sexual tension, I felt.
Oh, yeah. It was on fire. You're right.
It got my wife and I both ready for the evening. I'll put it that way.
Oh, yes. Leave it at that. But yeah,
sliding across the hay.
I know. I watched that and took one look at my wife and says, go put on two more dresses.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, you got two guys fighting to the death over a woman they both want to be with. And then it seems like in the middle of this brawl at some point, they realized, no, we should be together. Yeah.
And there were whips and chains.
Yeah,
little objects.
Yeah, some unidentified objects.
There were.
A steam pipe, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen parodies of that fight scene where it's like one thing after another just keeps coming off the walls.
Yeah. Also, now you know where Jason Bourne got it from, where he'd just pick up a magazine or a pen and fight with it.
You know? I can kill a man with this.
I think the identified thing was a yoke to keep two oxen together when you're
plowing
a field. Because my husband and I, we actually were put together on one of those for a whole weekend.
What? And by who?
A Christian marriage counseling.
They yoked you two together like a couple of ox?
Yeah, we plowed a field.
Did you really?
All weekend.
God damn. And you're still together, so I guess it worked.
Well, you can't get a divorce. That's not even a thing or possible.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd be too scared to ask him.
Oh, man. Imagine what would happen. Just terrible.
Oh, he'd be so mad.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Divorce is fake news anyways, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a hoax.
That's what I heard, too. It's like along with those, you know, like the trails in the sky that are made of cream of wheat because they have an overage of breakfast cereal and they spray it.
Oh, is that what? Because I know that there's something going on with them chemtrails. They ain't what they appear to be, but I hadn't heard that it was cream of wheat. Yeah. But it makes sense that they, because people don't eat that so much these days, and they've just made
nobody
too much
likes
of it. Right.
I got remarried so many times on account of thinking divorces were real, and when I found out they was a hoax, I learned I was a bigamist.
Oh, man. Yep.
Yeah.
Well. Oh.
So I got upwards of 7 to 10 wives.
All at the one time.
Yeah, as I was going to St. Ives, I met a man with 7 wives, and I'm that guy.
Yeah, and that's where you are. You're on the way to St. Ives, I believe.
I believe so.
Yep. Aren't we all? Well, folks, that there brings to a close that episode of Bonanza, episode 11, season 1. There's only 420 episodes left for us to talk about on this show, unfortunately. But yeah, another woman has died, and the Cartwrights hang on to their land for one more week. Dirk, do you have any final thoughts about this episode? Bring back any particular members for you or anything like that?
Well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I Mr. Coburn may have appeared more than once, but in one of those episodes, is when he turned the cast onto LSD, I believe.
Wait, I need clarity for real. And this is me, Mutt Taylor, asking, not anyone else.
Well, that's at least that was what it appeared to be.
I can't wait for that.
James Coburn turned the cast of Bonanza onto LSD.
I believe, I'm pretty sure if not that, maybe a later episode, but you can actually see it. If you look closely, like when the characters walk by, there's a trail behind them.
Oh, yeah. Chemtrail.
And when they shoot, there's all kinds of colors that come out of the guns. And, you know, it took on a whole new bit dent after Mr. Yeah. Coburn.
And they're all pie-eyed. Pupils as
pie-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Black as, yeah.
Wow.
Man, oh, man. I knew somebody was going to do it eventually. I didn't know it'd be Coburn.
Well, it was the 60s.
You know. It was, wasn't it?
Hey, Amy, when you you're doing like Christian eroticism, you also should do some Christian hardcore drugs.
Well, I haven't really gotten into that area of business yet. I mean, I'm still struggling. I'm still in this, you know, beginning stages, but I do have a line of milks and they have dextrine in them.
Wow.
Which helps. It's a housekeeping milk. It's to help to keep you you energized, to clean, and it's in a milk form.
Wow. Okay.
I've never heard of anybody who had a line of milks before.
I love milk.
Yeah.
Who doesn't? Yeah, that reminds me, I got to get over to the Truckee Strip. So let's wrap this up.
Yeah, we better wrap it up. All right. Well, thank you, as always, to Mutt Taylor and Amy Sleverson. And thank you oh so much to Dirk Blocker. It was a thrill and an honor and a delight to have you here. I can't even believe it.
Yeah. Right back at you.
Thank you. We will never fly this close to the sun again.
I don't believe we will.
The sun of Hoss.
Wow. This is the highest level of heaven as far as I'm concerned.
Hell yeah. All right, everybody. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Glad to be back. We'll see you next time when we will be talking about season 1, episode 12. We'll try to get Amy to watch that one in particular. But who knows? All right, folks. We'll see you then. Goodbye.
Bananas for Bonanza is brought to you by Andy Daly, with Maria Bamford and Matt Gorley. Theme song by Matt Gorley, with The Journeyman, which in this case are Mark McConville, Daniel Muchikoff, and Wade Ryan. Special thanks to our gang on the ground, Josh Richmond and Shannon Locke. Bananas for Bonanza is produced by Ryan Connor and Matt Gorley, and executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bennett. We'll see you next time.